class today. Good to see you all here. Before we begin, are there any comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? Okay, then I have a variety of announcements. If you look at the lecture notes, you'll see three of them up there. I'll talk about one more as well. So we finished grading test one. There's an announcement on Colab about that. We'll go look at that in just a moment. I've been asked to remind people that if you are a CS student and want a CS minor, the application deadline for that is March 1st. And there's links there about the minor program and about how to apply. If you are not a CS student, the minor is currently not open to people in other colleges. Also, this afternoon at 3:30 in Rice 130, there's a free showing of the short film She++. I've actually never watched this film, although I know the people that built it, and they're kind of cool people. So anyway, there's food there. You're welcome to go and see that and eat and have fun. So let's talk a little bit about the announcement that you can find on Colab about the test. Test grades have been posted in Colab. There's a field called Test Grades. You can go see your grades. And that has a link to another tool called TPEGS that you can use to look at your actual exam and any markup the grader decided to put on your individual pages. For context, the mean was 85, the median was 87, and the mode was 97, and three people got perfect scores. So that hopefully will put you somewhat in context, okay, as you look at your test. There's also a key to the test available. So you can go look and see what we were using when we graded, correct solutions, as well as sort of how we broke down points approximately. If you look at your exam and you think, you graded me too harshly, or you graded me too nicely, though nobody ever takes us up on that offer, you can use TPEGS to submit a regrade request. Now, regrade requests, what should you do? You should submit a regrade request if you have the key answer and you didn't get points, or you have a different answer that is actually correct, okay, and you didn't get the points you should for getting it correct. If you don't fit in one of those two categories, you are unlikely to get any improvement in your grade, and you are likely to make me annoyed having to look at your futile regrade request. But there's some guidelines here. If you're going to submit one, you have to do it by March 10th, and you should make sure you read and follow these instructions about how to format these. Do not write long paragraphs of text. Just tell me what you think it should have been, refer to the key, and be succinct, and we'll go from there. So, one more thing to note. A moderately small number of students, but in a class this size, many of you will have difficulty with TPEGS initially. TPEGS doesn't play nicely with something called cookies, which you may or may not be familiar with in your browser, but what this means in practice, if you try to log into TPEGS to view your exam and it doesn't let you, restart your browser and it should. If you restart your browser and it still doesn't, then send me email and I will see if we can figure out what happened. At the end of today, we'll go over the key a little bit, talk about the correct solutions to the problems, try to bring that into context. We need to get some other material done first, but it's there. You're welcome to use it if you wish. The other thing that is not on the lecture notes but is worth noting is that we have posted homework 4. Okay, so homework 4 is posted. I got it all right. Hooray! Of homework 4 is based off of a concept we're going to talk about today, comma-separated value files, CSV files. And there's a reason for that. Many of you, much to my chagrin, will not go on and major in computer science. And so what are you most likely to do with your programming? The most likely thing you're going to want to do, or one of the most likely things, is given a lot of data, figure out stuff about it. Some sort of data analytics is one of the most common things people need to do. And so CSV is a simple way of introducing those concepts of computing different kinds of things about them. So we have a data set about UVA enrollment this semester, thanks to a couple of other professors that have pulled this out of SIS, which is hard to use by itself. And so we'll ask some questions, like, you give us two departments and we'll tell you which one has more students. Or we will Find the average duration of classes in a particular department. Are classes in CS longer than they are in ECE? The answer turns out to be no. Classes in CS are only 170 minutes on average, in ECE they're 163, but you can compute this for whatever department you want. Okay. Course conflicts. You can give a time and we'll tell you all the courses in a department that overlap with that time. So it turns out that at 104 there's a lot of CS classes being offered, including this one. Okay. You can figure out what the starting and ending class of a particular department is. What's the earliest people come in to work if they work in the drama department? And you can find out that, you know, CS starts at 8 or 9 every day and goes quite late, except on Fridays. But other departments, like, for example, BME, on Mondays, its first class starts at 3 in the afternoon. So if you like sleeping in on Mondays, according to the data that I have available, that's when it begins. Did I say that incorrectly? Anyway, the last one we have is student-faculty ratio. Okay? You enter a department, and we calculate how many students there are, how many faculty there are, and therefore the ratio. And I challenge you to find any department that has more students per faculty than CS. Sorry about that. I was unable to find any with a random sampling. Drama is the smallest I was able to find. You're welcome to play around with it as well. So that's the homework. Just compute random stuff based on this data set. So what we need to talk about today then is, how do you get this data set? How do you read CSV files? What do you do with them once you have them so you're enabled to do this? One of the homework assignments, and just one of them, will depend somewhat on something we will talk about on Friday. The student ratio uses something called an array list, which is a topic for Friday. So as you're working on the homework, you might want to put off doing that one until after Friday's lecture, although you're certainly welcome to read ahead and do that beforehand. So this homework is up. It is alive. You can do it. But to do it, we need to talk a little bit about CSV files. So the core idea of a CSV file, actually, let's look at a CSV file first. I'm going to open one up. This is a CSV file. Okay, this is the actual file. This is a very small one. The basic idea of a CSV file is every line has a variety of fields in it, and the fields are all separated by some delimiter. Commas and semicolons are the most frequent delimiters. We will use semicolons for everything we're doing, at least this week. Okay. And so the basic idea of how do you read this, when we know how to read every line, right? We do a while, the scanner has next line, read the next line. Okay. Once we have a line, we then want to sort of pull out the individual fields, the individual pieces of this file, so that we can say, for example, what is the birthday of MST3K? And find out that MST3K was born in 1998 on the 26th of November, right? To do that, though, we have to separate it out. The traditional way, the easy way to do that, how do we split this out, is there's a method in the string class called split. What I call split, I give it the delimiter, the thing I want to split around, so I could give it a semicolon, and it will return to me an array of strings. So if I were to split this second line, it would give me an array with three things in it. The second one would be the string 25. It doesn't change them from strings to other things, it leaves them as strings. Okay? But we can get those by using the split method. That's the big idea of how we're going to parse these files, turn them into arrays, and then compute stuff based on them. So let's see an example. This example is on the lecture notes. Okay? I have here a full example. For this example, I'm using a file object to read a file. I downloaded the example file we were just looking at off of the website. I put it in my project folder, but not in my source folder. Right, so I put it in the same folder as my project, but not in the same folder as SRC, because that's where we naturally read files from in Eclipse. And let's just talk about this file. Okay? First thing I do, I open a file object. Remember, we need a file object if we want to read a file. So I make myself a file object with the name of the file I want to read. I make a scanner for that file. okay, that uses that file is what it's reading from. And then I say, while there are more lines in my file, while it has another line, I'm going to read a line. I'm then going to call this magical split method, which says, chop this into an array and chop it everywhere you find a semicolon. Sorry me. It will get rid of the semicolons as it does this and just tell me the stuff that was between the semicolons in an array. One thing you often want to do as you're dealing with CSV files, there might be blank lines. So after I split it, I will say, if there's more than one thing here, and this wasn't just some sort of blank line, then what I'm doing right now is I'm looping through the list and printing everything out, just so we can see what there is. So let's run this, let's see how this works, and then we'll come back and talk some more about how we do more interesting things with it. So I run this file, and I see that it indeed opens up my file, it splits every line, and it prints out those things one at a time. Yes?
Sorry, can you explain what the split command actually does?
What does the split command do? Yes, I can explain what the split command does. Let's see this more clearly. Let's print out. Let me add a println before I split that prints out the line. Okay? And let's add a println after the split that prints out the parts. I run this and I will see fun things. Okay, so for the first one here, I see the line is ID semicolon, age semicolon, birthday. One string has two semicolons in it. Once I split, I see this garbage looking thing that is what happens when you print an array. I have some array. What's an array again? An array is a list. A fixed length list of one type of thing. So parts in particular is a list of three things. All of those things are strings. And so down here in my for loop, as I walk over that list, I see the first one was the string ID, the second one was the string age, the third one was the string birthday. Do you want me to say more about it?
So if there was one cell where, like, let's say the average number of characters in each cell is like 3.
Okay.
One cell that has like 20 characters in it.
I don't want that open in Excel. Yes, split only cares about the semicolons. Because I told it to split based on semicolons.
No, I mean like when it prints out.
So the printout is using the tab character. So the tab character aligns to 8 spaces by default. If something was wildly different size, the tab character would look different in the console. That isn't part of the split. That's part of how I'm formatting what I split it. So we can see that perhaps a little more clearly. If I add here quotes on either side of my part when I print it out, we will see that the parts are ID, age, and birthday. And then I just happen to be printing a space and a tab between each one, which is what makes them spaced out nicely in the output. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay, there's a hand here, and then there's a couple more. Here first. If instead of a semicolon I put T, what would happen? Let's try it. Okay? It splits ID semicolon age semicolon birthday into ID semicolon age semicolon birth and day. Right? It splits MST3K semicolon 25 semicolon the birthday of MST3K into MS and 3K semicolon 25 semicolon, right? It splits on whatever I ask it to split on. So there's nothing magic about the semicolon except it's a traditional thing to separate things in a CSV file. There is a question near the back here. Yes? How do you save a file? It depends on your web browser. But in general, how do you save a file? You right-click on the file, or control-click if you're on Mac. You click save link as, or save target as, or save as, some sort of save something, okay? You go to the folder where your project is located, and you click save. You're welcome. There was also a question somewhere back here a moment ago. Yes?
We were just wondering why there were parentheses after the
Ah, yes. Why are there no parentheses after length? Because parts is an array, not a string. As well, actually, there's three ways to find out the length of something in Java, depending on what type of thing it is. Arrays, it's dot length, no parentheses. Strings, it's dot length with parentheses. And everything else, it's dot size with parentheses. We'll see that on Friday. Why are there three different ways? Because nobody asked my opinion when designing the language. But there they are, and you have to use the right one. If I try to put parentheses here, Eclipse will complain. Because there is no length method in an array. There's just a like field, which is like a method, but doesn't do any action. It's just sort of memory, a nested variable, if you will. Other questions about this little piece of code? Yes?
Are there ways to get rid of those sort of like junk lines between the split out categories?
The junk lines, like, do you mean this one? What junk?
Where it says, that.
So the junk lines are created by these two println's that I added just a moment ago so we could talk about what split does.
Oh, okay.
I get rid of those println's, those junk lines go away. Any other questions about this little piece of code? Yes?
When you declare the array parts, how can you then specify?
Good question. So the question is, why do I not need to declare the size of the parts array when I make it? Okay, let's go remind ourselves how we declared arrays before. Okay, remember this line here? Int bracket bracket x equals new int 7. Declaring the variable x, int bracket bracket x, does not include a size. A variable that could talk about an array could talk about an array of any size. Doesn't matter how big it is. Small arrays, big arrays, it could declare any array. Okay? But when I create the array, when I make a new one, I have to decide how big it is. When we look at our CSV here, I declare a variable that can hold strings, an array of strings. How many strings? It can point to any array of strings. And then on the other side of my equals, I'm telling my line split method to actually create the array. So inside the implementation of line.split, they will have actually had to decide how big the array was and set it up. But we're just letting line do that for us. That method split is creating the array. So it's figuring out the size for us. We don't have to worry about telling it explicitly ourselves. Yes? Sure, let's talk about this for loop. So if I look at this for loop, I starts at 0, I goes up by 1 every time, I ends at parts.length. So in this case, all of my, well, it depends on what I split on, right? Let's go back to semicolon. When I split on a semicolon, all of my parts lengths are 3. But in general, it'd be whatever my parts like this. So let's take ID, age, birthday. So I is 0, I is less than 3, increment I by 1. And what do I do every time? I print a quote character, the element of the array at the current index, another quote character, a space, and a tab character. So I print the quote before ID, the ID itself, another quote, there's a space, and then there is a tab. And I loop through that for every element, including the last one, which actually has a space and a tab after it. And then once I'm finished looping, I go to the next line.
And then it goes back to the top of the while loop.
And then because the for is done and the if is done, we go back up to the top of the while loop and do the whole thing again for the next line. Yes?
So how would you fix that tabbing console?
I don't. Question is how I fix the tabbing. I don't bother. The tab character aligns to the next spot on the output that is a multiple of 8. And unless I happen to know how long my input is, I can't line that up. And to know how long my input is, I'd have to know how long all of these were to the very end of the file. So in order to get them all to line up perfectly, I'd have to read the entire file to figure out how wide everything is, and then read it again to print it all out, and just more work than it's worth. So we're not even going to bother. Okay, I print out tabs here to make it roughly light up, and sometimes it doesn't work. Oh well, this was just an example. Any other questions about this file? Yes?
After the forward slash, can you do a forward
slash? A forward slash what?
Forward slash n.
Yep. Yep, what will happen if I do that? If I put a slash n there, then each entry will be on its own line. Right? Because that's a new line at the end of each one. And so when I look at my output, I'll see that I have ID, age, birthday, each with a space tab, a new line after them. And then I have another new line after that 3. So another way of forming my output, if I wanted to look at what's there. Other questions? Okay. Let's talk about another piece here. Okay. I read this from a file that I had downloaded onto my computer. But I don't have to do that. We talked about reading from a keyboard and reading from files. There's another thing we could read from, which is a URL. We could read from the web. Okay? So the idea behind reading from a URL is we make a URL class to represent the URL, just like we made a file class to represent the file. We pass it into a scanner in almost the same way we passed a file in, and then we use the scanner. We're reading from the web page instead of from some local file or from the keyboard. So let me just grab this example code we have here and pop it into a new project, a new file here. So if I want to do this, all I have to do that's different than what I did before is I make a URL object instead of a file object, okay, which has a full URL to some web resource from http://, up to the whole file, whole path on the web. This happens to be one on the CS1110 page, right? I make a scanner. There is one magical thing you have to do in order to get a URL into a scanner. You have to say .openstream at the end of your URL. It's unclear to me, I mean, I know historically why this is the case, but it's an odd decision that you have to say this when you do that. But you do. A URL just talks about the idea that a web resource could exist. The OpenStream method has to go through all the headache of actually seeing if you're connected to the internet and establishing a connection with the other server. And so they require you to make that explicit, that yes, I actually want to try to use the internet here. They won't do it for you. Okay? But if you just put that in there, the rest of this file is basically the same as the last file. I think it's actually exactly the same as the last file. I read a line, I split it, I semicolons. If it's not empty, I loop over everything and print it out. I even have the space tab again, okay? But this reads from a URL instead. So I run this, I will see that this particular website has a list of primes, the index of each prime, and the value of that prime squared. Why does it have that? Because I needed an example CSV file, and here it is. Okay? So the first line has text. The rest of the lines have numbers in all three spots. But when we split, we don't get ints, we don't get an int array, we get a string array. We still get back those strings. So before we talk about what we could do with these numbers, any questions about URL or follow-on questions about CSV? We haven't answered yet. Yes? Yes, I can, but in a strange way. Okay? If I want the 6th line of my file, scanner only reads things one thing at a time. So to get to the 6th line, what I would need to do is ignore 5 lines. So I make a for loop that goes 5 times, and then I would just do CSV reader dot next line. Read the line and just completely ignore it. I'm not even going to bother saving it to a variable. I'm just going to read it and throw it away. Then after I'm done that, the first five lines have already been read. The next line I read will be the sixth line. So if I run this, I will see I only get the sixth line and onward. I don't get the first five lines. If I only wanted the fifth line, I could say string line 5 equals by CSV reader dot next line after I had already read 5. And then I can get my string array. I'll call this row equals line 5 dot split. Okay. And now the row array is the split version of the sixth line of my input file. And only the sixth line of my input file. Because I read 5 lines and threw them away up here in my for loop. I then read the sixth line and I split it up.
So do you have to do all 3 of those, or is that like an either or kind of thing? You can either do a for loop or
a loop. If I want line 6, I have to read lines 1 through 5 first, and then I can read line 6. So if my goal is to get line 6, I don't think you get any shorter than these 3 lines of code. Yes?
So string line 5 is line
5? It's line 6. Yeah, because I was thinking in 0 indexing. So it was line index 5, but it's the 6th line. We can name it whatever we want. Although if I rename one of them, I should probably rename everywhere it shows up, hey? Yes?
Would it tell that scanner to go back up to the top, like reset and restart?
Is there any way to get a scanner to go back up to the top? No! Okay, if I really need to read a web page twice, I have to open it twice and make 2 scanners to read from it. This is generally considered a bad idea. Whoever's supplying the website has to pay a little bit of money every time you read the website, and it's just sort of rude to read it over and over again, right? They won't stop you from doing it usually, although actually a lot of websites, if you read it a few thousand times in a few seconds, they actually will block you and never let you read it again. But in general, you want to try to read things only as often as you need them. So if I really needed to read it multiple times, the first time I would probably read the entire web page into a file or into a variable or somewhere, store it locally, and then walk over it multiple times internally. Yes? I'm sorry?
So did you have like all the code and then put it inside a for loop? How many times do you want to do that?
If I wanted to read the website multiple times, I could make a for loop that creates the scanner multiple times and it would read the website multiple times. Again, this is considered rude. You should not do this in your homework. Where I think you will be tempted to read a website multiple times, on the homework description, I give you a hint about how to do it without doing that. I would encourage you to follow those hints. In part because when you're saying your homework, you have a time limit for how long you can run, and every read of a web page takes time. So you don't want to read a lot of times. But if you wanted to, you could, right? If I really, really wanted to read this website over and over and over again, I just need to make sure that the open streamline up through the end of my reading was all inside a loop. Other questions? Yes?
All right, so like on the way back, just trying to get the CSV file to be like in my Java project, and it's like making it an Excel file, is that right?
Yeah, it might, depends on your computer.
Okay.
Sorry. You can rename it to something other than CSV. The code will still work because it doesn't care what it's named. And you'll be able to look at it differently. But yeah, so Eclipse tries to be clever. It tries to figure out how you open these sorts of files on your computer. If you have Excel installed, it will have claimed all CSV files. And so Eclipse will try to open it with Excel if you try to open it. But if I really wanted to see the contents of it in Eclipse, I could just go here and rename this file to be example.txt, and now when I open it, I get to see what's inside. If you rename it, though, you'll also have to rename the name of the file when you're opening it in your Java file. But once you do that, it should just work. Other questions? Okay. Some thoughts here. There's nothing magic about reading CSV files from a URL. You can read any page you want from a URL. They usually look really strange. Okay? So if I, for example, I were to just go directly to, let's even just do the course website. Okay? If I go to the course website and print and read that instead of a particular CSV file inside of it, I will see that it looks like this. Isn't that fun? Okay? And it goes on and on and on. It's really wide. And why does it look like this? It looks like this because under the hood, websites are usually encoded in something like HTML, which is a file format for describing how to draw things on a browser screen. Okay? And so it describes how to draw things on a browser screen. And when I look at the website, I will see all this information about how you draw different parts of a website. You can read any website you want this way, but you won't always get meaningful results. Okay? So we'll mostly stick with reading CSV files for websites, particularly for this homework we will. But if you ever want to make some program that crawls some other website and finds stuff, you can do it. You just have to understand what it's giving you back is not what you see on the screen. It's a description of how to draw what you see on the screen. Usually written in a language called HTML. That's just an aside. We're not immediately doing any assignments in HTML, nor will we even particularly talk about it this semester. But if you want to, you can. Okay. Let's talk about one more thing we need to know in order to handle CSV files effectively, particularly ones with numbers. I said that when I read this line, it's going to give me a bunch of strings, an array of strings. I cannot do things that I might want to do with an array of strings, like, for example, add them up, because addition with strings smashes them together. It doesn't do mathematical addition. So let's change this file a little, just a tiny bit, so that we can add up all the strings. The first thing I'm doing is I'm moving a next line up before the loop. I know that this file's first line is a header row. Okay? It has the names of each of the columns. This is fairly common in CSV files to have the first row not be like the rest of them. It is not true of the files you'll be reading for the homework, so you don't need to do that for there. But this is going to what's frequently called burn the header line. Why we call it burn instead of ignore or throw away or move past, I don't know, but burn is the traditional name. Okay? So I'm going to burn the header line of my file. And then for every other line, instead of doing this, let's loop over and print them all out. Okay? If I've got a line with data in it, let's try turning the first entry there into a number and doing something with it. So I want to get some int x that is based on part sub 0. Somehow. Get that first number out. The problem is I can't just use equals here, because part sub 0 is a string, because parts is a string array. So I can't just assign it to an int. I can't cast it to an int either, because casting like this only really works for primitives. There is a kind of casting that works for objects, but it doesn't do what you expect in this case. Okay? So I need some other way of turning the string into a number. Now I could do that with a for loop and character at and figure out the value of every decimal and do some math. This is not that hard, it's just annoying, and somebody else did it for me. There is a class called integer which has a method called parseInt. I give it a string, it returns the integer of that string represents. This will fail if you don't give it an integer. If you give it a word, it will blow up. But if I give it the text version of an integer, this will parse that integer for me. Show me what it is as a number. Once I have it as a number, I could do things like compute the sum of the thing by, for example, saying that I want to increase the sum by the value of x. And then I can print out that sum once I'm done. So this program now, by having integer.parseInt, by initializing sum before the loop and printing it out afterwards, I can compute the sum of all of the prime numbers in this file. Okay? Which turns out in this particular case to be 77. If I want to do other things, compute the maximum, count how many there are, those sorts of things, be a very similar structure. Right? A lot of CSV filing will feel very repetitive. And that's good, that reinforces these ideas. You read a line, you split it into fields, you grab the fields you want, you parse them if you need them as numbers, you do whatever you need to do with them. You repeat that for the whole file, and then at the end, you print out the results. Questions? Okay. I always encourage people to do homework early. I would encourage you to have at least a look and try some of the homework before we come back on Friday. So that if there are parts of this that don't make sense, you've realized it and can ask me questions about it. However, I'm now going to switch gears and review the exam a little bit. Yes?
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Yes. Good question. So let's talk briefly about how this homework works, okay? Professor Sheriff has pulled a bunch of data that Professor Bloomfield in physics has pulled together into a set of websites, a large set of websites. You pick your favorite place, your favorite department, you put it at the end of this front part, and that is a URL that is a CSV file of data about that department's enrollment. Okay? So, you'll notice, and then there's a list of what all the columns of that mean. There are 19 columns, and this is what they all mean. Okay? And then you see here that the source program says enter two department IDs, and then tell me which one's bigger. Well, the bigger is just a sum, right? We read the CSVs, but how do we get them? Well, I'm going to need to do, as I'm going to need to make a URL that has this in the front, and then whatever the user typed at the end, read all of that data. Then do it again for the other department. Does that make sense? No, you just need to know the two they tell me, right? So if they say CS and SIS, then I create the URL for CS, I create the URL for SIS, and I read those two. That didn't make sense. Okay. Let's talk about how we do this. If we grab this front part, somebody give me a department moniker.
PPOL.
PPOL. Here's PPOL. I didn't even know PPOL existed, but here it is. Okay? I can pick anything I want. I just put it here. I can say, well, how about the drama department? If I spell it wrong, I get a blank page. If I spell it correctly, there are all the drama classes. Okay? So what's your code going to do? It's going to read that ending, stick it onto the front part, use that to make the URL, use that to read the page. Yes?
It seems like it's not necessarily, like, if you just do next line, it won't read what you want it to.
That's because when the browser is trying to read this file as if it was HTML. As if it was a description of what to draw. The actual file under the hood looks like this and does have individual lines. Okay? So when you read it, you will see that this is a 5-line file. Actually, 6-line file. The 6th line is blank, which is why we have to check to see if there's stuff there. And it's split by semicolons, and you'll get to read it normally. Yes? Control U is the shortcut for view source. If you forget that, somewhere in your view menu, there should be something called view source or page source or something like that. Sometimes it's an edit. I always get lost, so I just remember the shortcut because they move it around. Where did they hide it in here? Here it is. So in this version of Firefox, it is under Tools, Web Developer, Page Source. It'll be somewhere, but it's always Control-U. So you just could say Control-U and see what the page really looks like. Other things we should say about CSV before I review the exam. Okay, let's review the exam. There were 5 points associated with the first page. These were bubbling in your ID and signing your name. So if you failed one of those, you'll lose points on that. Second page, right, we had these various pieces. Most of these, most people got reasonably right. Let's talk about a few of the ones that people didn't. So this one here, 9 divided by 10 is 0. Right? It would be 0.9, but 9 and 10 are both integers, so it's 0. When I cast 0 to a double, I get 0.0. I do not get 0.9 because the casting happens after the division. For this one, though, it's the other way around. The casting turns 10 to 10.0. 9 divided by 10.0 is 0.9. Okay. Another one that a lot of people got wrong down here. 1.0 plus 2 is 3.0. 3.0 plus the string 3 is the string 3.03. Okay? Because we go left to right, so we do this addition first, which creates 3.0. Then when we add anything to a string, we get a bigger string. We could talk about the others there as well. We had an if-else. Questions? Your test is available in the test grades, and then there's a link to TPEGS. Yes?
If you restart your web browser and it still won't work,
then send me email and I will try to look into see why that's happening. Actually, let me ask this first. Is there anybody that has loaded TPEGS correct successfully? I have loaded TPEGS and it works. Okay, then I probably forgot to switch some bit somewhere. So I will go and try to fix it for everybody and sit down and do an announcement where I think it works. And if it still doesn't work, then we'll talk about it. Okay. So here, you weren't allowed to change A. Don't do stuff we didn't ask you to do. Some people use A++. That changes A. That breaks the code. Problem with this program. Square was declared inside these curly braces, so it doesn't exist out here. That was the problem. There were lots of solutions. Any solution that would fix that problem was okay. Name one difference between primitive types and non-primitive types. There are lots. You can read the list. There are ones that aren't in the list. Okay. How many characters are in this string? 26. What's the one at index 2? 0 is A, 1 is B, 2 is C, so C. And you actually have to print the first part as well. There are some points for that as well. Print 2 lines of a file. You can do this in just 4 lines of code. Most of you use more. We make a file object. We put it in a scanner. We print out 2 lines by using the next line method. If you didn't have a file, if you didn't have a scanner, if you didn't use next line, right? Points off for that. This is a fun one, right? So let's see what happens. I starts at 1, J starts at 0. Is 1 equal to 0? No, it's not. Is I equal to 1? Yes, it is. Is J equal to 1? No, it's not. 2 times 0, is that less than 1? Yes, it is. Yes, thank you. I knew this was wrong. Right, so is I 1? Yes, it is. J is not. So we get a C right here, because I is 1. Okay? That's the whole of the if-else's here. So we then are going to go back up to the for loop and change J to 1. I is now equal to J, but I mod 2, 1 mod 2 is 1, which is not the same as 0, so we get a B. The second time through the loop. The third time through the loop, J is now equal to 2. 1 is not equal to 2, but I is still equal to 1, so we get a C. We have now finished at the inner for loop, so we print a new line, which is why the next thing shows up on the next row. I goes up to 2, J starts over at 0, 2 is not equal to 0, neither of them are 1, 2 times 0 is less than 2, so we get our D. Okay, and we continue in similar fashion. You can walk through it one step at a time. The trick is sort of to just keep track of I and J's value at every point along the way. Rewrite the for loop as a while loop. Most of you got this right. Some of you, however, put the I equals I plus 4 before the println instead of after. Remember, the update part of the for loop is the last thing that happens. So we need to do the initialization first, then the loop, then the body, then the final piece here, the update. And everybody's favorite battleship. Okay. You print something, you make a scanner, you can do that in any order, right? You need to, inside the loop, ask the digger cell and read what they write. Some of you read a line of text instead of two numbers. It is possible to do this correctly, but I don't think any of you got the balance checking correctly if you did that. We want to do balance checking, so is x less than 1 or greater than 10, or y less than 1 or y greater than 10? If any of those are true, then we're out, not on the board. If none of them were true, then we check to see if x was 7 and y was greater than 6 and y was less than 7. There's other ways to write this, of course. Okay, but then you get a hit. If you didn't get a hit or out of the board, you got a miss. Again, you can reorder these three, but that's the pieces. And we have points associated with various parts of this, looping 10 times, making a scanner, reading the input. Okay. That was the exam. Questions about exam answers? All right, I will try to get TPEGs right. Oh, sorry, yes, question.
When will we get our grades?
Your grades are already posted. They are posted in Colab under test grades. Now try to get the TPEGs link working soon.